You're listening to SBS News.
Sunday, April 29. As we approached the shore, they all made off, except two men who seemed resolved to oppose our landing. As soon as I saw this, I ordered the boats to lay down their oars in order to speak to them. But this was to little purpose, for neither us nor Tupai could understand one word they said. We then threw some nails and bread ashore, which they took up and seemed pleased with, insomuch that I thought they may beckon us to come ashore. But in this, we were mistaken. They again came to oppose us, upon which I fired a musket between the two.
Captain James Cook's diary details his first contact with Indigenous people in Botany Bay. It was a hostile exchange, as Emeritus Professor at the University of New South Wales, John Gascoigne, explains.
It was a contested landing. He marched forward with his men, tried to speak to the Aborigines on the beach, but they didn't understand, obviously, his language, nor that of Tupai, who was Polynesian and who had acted as an interpreter in New Zealand. They threw spears. He responded with gunfire, small shots, so the intention was not to kill. The Aborigines retreated into the bush.
Cooman was the name of one of the two men Cook shot at that day. One of his descendants, Rodney Kelly, says Cook and his landing party then took shields and spears from the Gwegal country he arrived on, but they left something else behind for them.
One story that is not in the history books is one story told by my great-great-grandmother, and that's Queen Emma of La Perouse, and she was told by the elders that in 1770, Cook would leave casks of dynamite on the shore and rigged to blow up.
2 years earlier, Captain Cook's ship, the Endeavour, and his crew of 94 people left the English port of Plymouth. They were on a scientific expedition bound for Tahiti to witness the transit of Venus across the sun. They were under secret instructions from the British royal family to discover and map out the rumoured Great Southern Landmass, known only as Terra Australis. Professor Gascoigne again.
For centuries there had been speculation there was a Great Southern Land to balance the great landmass of the Northern Hemisphere with Europe and America.
But there is a lesser known and significant story of contact between Cook and Australia's First Nations people on this voyage. It took place in far north Queensland, where Cook stayed for several weeks while the Endeavour underwent urgent repairs. During that time, some of his crew took about a dozen green sea turtles from the area and brought them aboard the ship. Historian Professor Mark McKenna from the University of Sydney explains what happened next.
Aboriginal people in Cooktown, Gugu Yimata, protested. They came aboard the ship and complained about the taking of those turtles, and Cook wasn't going to give them any of the turtles, so that's what they were demanding, that they be shared. And Cook refused to do that because he needed that food for his onward journey. The Aboriginal men went ashore. They went back ashore off the boat, and they set fire to the area where Cook and Banks had kept their provisions.
A tense scene broke out that involved Captain Cook and his botanist, Joseph Banks, firing at them from the shore. Eventually, an elderly Indigenous man emerged from the bushes and led a group of men towards Banks and Cook. He broke off the tip of his spear and lay it on the ground, and the men behind him followed by laying their spears at a nearby tree. The elderly man began to collect sweat from his armpit on his fingers, bring it to his mouth, and blow towards Cook and Banks.
In recent years, we've discovered the intention of that old Aboriginal man, and that his intentions were, you know, that gesture of dragging his arm under his armpit and blowing the sweat is a kind of one of the most intimate things you can do. It's a gesture of peace and reconciliation indeed, and a sign that the conflict was over.
Cook had received specific instructions from the British royal family to open up discussions with any people he came into contact with on Terra Australis. Their intention was to set up training posts in the name of the Crown. Professor of Indigenous History at the University of Newcastle, John Maynard, explains.
We realised they didn't obey those instructions, and as such, from the Crown, which, you know, as I said, was open up discussion, gain consent, which we know we never did. In that respect, I mean, from my perspective, he's in violation against his orders from the Crown or from the Admiralty, because he went on to Possession Island, jammed the flag down into the ground, and claimed the entire east coast of Australia in the name of the British Crown.
There is no denying that Captain Cook has a complex legacy. To some, he is a courageous explorer. To others, he stole land from the first Australians. Professor McKenna is an expert in the contemporary understandings of James Cook. He illustrates the complexities of Cook's legacy.
A lot of Australians confuse James Cook with Arthur Phillip. So in other words, they confuse the arrival of Phillip and the First Fleet with the convicts in 1788. They confuse that event with Cook's arrival 18 years earlier in 1770 at Botany Bay. And also, we kind of often get into the mistake of thinking that Cook was already clear about what would happen in Australia when he arrived in 1770, which is not the case. He had no idea that a penal colony would be set up 18 years after he arrived at Botany Bay.
Professor John Maynard explains his view of Captain Cook and how his arrival has affected his Indigenous community.
For me, Cook is a complex character. I mean, and again, I've got the greatest admiration for Cook as a navigator, as a cartographer, and certainly an inspiring leader of his crews. But, you know, you've got to take into context the stories that Aboriginal people retain in so many different communities about the impact of James Cook.
Rodney Kelly feels strongly that Cook showed a lack of respect for the Indigenous people on that first interaction.
For people like myself, my family, my people, we think of his legacy as something that, you know, is on the wrong side of history. And you know, a lot of those things, what he'd done was so bad that, you know, we could never think of him any other way.
But Professor Maynard believes the Indigenous population was bound to come into contact with another civilization at one point or another.
We were never going to be left alone here. I mean, we can't live on in that fantasy that things were not going to happen. It was going to happen at some point, whether it was the British or someone else, and whether the outcome would have been different, we're not to know.
Ilias Bakala, SBS News.